depths of Knuckle Drag, Oklahoma, a pissed off liberal named Bart Cop, and he brings you Bart Cop Radio.
Mr. Clark, your written remarks will be entered into the record in full. We'd ask you sort of to summarize your statement and please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have only a very brief opening statement. I welcome these hearings because of the opportunity they provide to the American people to better understand why the tragedy of 9/11 happened and what we must do to prevent a reoccurrence. I also welcome the hearings because it is finally a forum where I can apologize to the loved ones of the victims of 9/11. To them who are here in the room, to those who are watching on television, your government failed you. Those entrusted with protecting you failed you. And I failed you. We tried hard, but that doesn't matter because we failed. And for that failure, I would ask, once all the facts are out, for your understanding and for your forgiveness. For that, Mr. Chairman, I'll be glad to take your questions.
That was the first and only apology America has received from this crooked, illegal government who went to sleep at best on 9/11, and we don't know what the worst could be. It's my opinion, yesterday was the worst day so far the Bush administration has had. After all these years, someone has stood up and said, Bush is not perfect. He is not doing a good job. He is not paying attention. He failed us on 9/11. He's done nothing to protect this country. He's done nothing but loot the treasury and turn his back on the important problems so he could reward his friends in big industry and big oil and big timber and big banking and big everything. Bush's last priority has always been the people. His first priority has always been personal enrichment. And finally, what, 2.5 years after 9/11, finally somebody is honest enough to stand up and say, we screwed up. We're sorry. People died. It's our fault. That shouldn't have happened. But the smug and arrogant bastards who are in control of our government against the will of the people have never apologized. They've always said, we didn't know. Could happen. Next. Watch this drive. That's the best we get from these crooks who have stolen power. And after all this time, someone finally stood up and said, we screwed up. 3,000 are dead because we went to sleep at best. We don't know how bad it's going to get. We don't know what the worst could be. I believe Richard Clark's testimony yesterday might possibly open the door to other people finally speaking up. Maybe his courage will be infectious. Maybe the Democrats will see what it looks like when a man stands up and says, this is wrong. Bush does not have clothes on. The idiot is naked. The monkey's hanging in a tree without pants. Finally, someone said it. I'll be damned, it happened in my lifetime. Where the hell are the Democrats? Why won't they have as much courage as Richard Clark? Why do they continue to let this rape happen at their feet and do nothing? What is wrong with the Democrats? The Republicans are the only ones that are going to save us. Richard Clark, by all accounts I've read, is a Republican, and he's the one that came forward to say, no, this is not how it happened. The story that your government is telling you is a lie. I'll tell you what happened. I was there. I was a witness. I saw it. You're being sold a bill of goods by an illegal monkey. Those are my words. He's finally told the truth to the American people, and he did it on live TV under oath. How many times have I said, live TV under oath, that's where you get the facts, because when everybody sees you and then you get caught lying, your career is over and you might have to go to jail. Condi Rice. She's been on Face the Nation. She's been on Meet the Press. She's been on Good Morning America. She's been everywhere flapping her gums about how innocent they are and how they didn't know and how Bush was a heroic commander that day, poking everybody in the chest saying, these are the plans. Follow my orders. I'm in charge here. I'm your big leader. But she refuses to say any of that shit under oath. She'll say it anywhere and everywhere. She'll say if she sees a microphone or a camera, she runs towards it, screaming like a little banshee. Bush is great. Bush is great. We did it all right. Everything was perfect. It was just the laws of chance that the bad hand came up. And they say, fine, say it under oath. No, I won't do it. I won't say what I said under oath. I can't say it under oath. Why can't she say it under oath? She's got plenty to say, but when you put her under oath, suddenly she gets real quiet. Now she's got nothing to say because she's under oath. It makes a difference, and we always have to get back to impeachment. They put Clinton under oath, start asking him about his girlfriends, about his past. What about that girl in 1978? Did you screw her, Mr. Clinton? What about that girl in 1981? What'd you do with her? Did you get in her pants, Mr. Clinton? So that was important, so he had to be under oath, because it was important. And when we got 3,000 dead, no, people like Condi Rice. I didn't see Smirk up there either. Why don't we get Bush and Rice up there? The people who refuse to testify, let's get them on live TV under oath and grill them. 3,000 dead, 12 trillion missing, an illegal war fought for no reason, and they're not asked to justify. But if Clinton looked at a girl in 85, he's got some splaining to do. This is a crock. Richard Clark stood up and said, no, I'm as mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore. And he testified. And he wrote a book. And he opened his mouth. And he went on TV. And he talked about things. He said what needed to be said. Shot of Chinako for Richard Clark.
You intended to mislead the press, did you not?
No. I think there's a very fine line that anyone who's been in the White House in any administration can tell you about. And that is, when you are special assistant to the president and you're asked to explain something that is potentially embarrassing to the administration because the administration didn't do enough or didn't do it in a timely manner and is taking political heat for it, as was the case there. Actually, I think you have three choices. You can resign rather than do it. I chose not to do that. The second choice one has, Governor, is whether or not to say things that are untruthful. And no one in the Bush White House asked me to say things that were untruthful, and I would not have said them. The third choice that one has is to put the best face you can for the administration on the facts as they were, and that is what I did. And I think that is what most people in the White House, in any administration, do when they're asked to explain something that is embarrassing to the administration.
But you will admit that what you said in August of 2002 is inconsistent with what you say in your book.
No, I don't think it's inconsistent at all. I think, as I said in your last round of questioning, Governor, that it's really a matter here of emphasis and tone. And that it's really, I mean, what you're suggesting, perhaps, is that as special assistant to the President of the United States, when asked to give a press backgrounder, I should spend my time in that press backgrounder criticizing him. I think that's somewhat of an unrealistic thing to expect.
Well, what it suggests to me is that there is one standard of candor and morality for White House special assistants and another standard of candor and morality for the rest of America. I don't get that.
I don't think it's a question of morality at all. I think it's a question of politics.
I'm not a Washington insider. I've never been a special assistant in the White House. I'm from the Midwest, so I think I'll leave it there.
Congressman Roman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. appreciate your patience. This has been, I'm sure, a long day for you, Mr. Clark. I want to explore a little bit more, since we've heard from Mr. Tenet on this issue today, the predator issue. As you know, the predator first came out of use in Kosovo, and it was used in various activities with a laser on it to track Serb tanks to help us go after those tanks. It was flown in 2000 in the Clinton administration as a recon vehicle, unmanned recon vehicle. In 2001, we had a debate, a complex debate that I can understand both sides of. It took several months to try to resolve it. There are two issues here, on the recon predator and on the armed predator. Mr. Tenet said that they were not blocking the armed predator. You have said that they were blocking the armed predator. How do we reconcile these two? And please take us through a little bit of this. I want to ask you if it would have made much of a difference getting the unarmed up, and if the armed could have been put up earlier than October of 2001.
Let me begin in the first few months of the year 2000. President Clinton was enormously frustrated because he had authorized, in effect, the assassination of bin Laden and his lieutenants by CIA. He had also authorized, in principle, the use of military forces, cruise missiles, to attack and kill bin Laden and his lieutenants. And none of this had happened because the CIA had been unable to use its human intelligence resources in Afghanistan to provide, I'm sorry, Senator, actionable intelligence. On the occasions when we had things that looked like actionable intelligence, the three or four occasions, the director of CIA himself said the intelligence wasn't good enough. So the president was very mad, and he asked Sandy Berger and me to come up with a better way. I asked the director of the Joint Staff, Admiral Fry, and the associate DCI, Charlie Allen, to form a task force to come up with a better way. They proposed flying the Predator in Afghanistan. CIA's Directorate of Operations, the director of the Directorate of Operations, opposed the use of Predator in 2000 for reconnaissance purposes. He said that if there were additional resources available to pay for the Predator operation, he would prefer to use them on human intelligence.
And how much are we talking about, Mr. Clark?
Pennies, relatively.
Hundreds of thousands of dollars?
Some of it cost hundreds of thousands. The whole program was in the low millions, I think. In any event, this slowed things down, obviously. Mr. Berger took up my cause with the Director of Central Intelligence and got their agreement that they would fly the reconnaissance version. It was flown in September and October of 2000. 11 flights. The Directorate of Operations put a lot of restrictions on those flights, in part because they were afraid that the aircraft would be shot down and they would have to pay for it. I tried to point out that even if the aircraft were shot down, the pilot would return safely to home. But that didn't seem to persuade them. In any event, during those flights, at CIA's insistence, they were designed as a proof-of-concept operation, meaning that we could not have cruise missiles, other military activity, other covert action capabilities cued to this, so that when the Predator did see bin Laden, as it did, I think, on three occasions, but clearly on one in that time frame, there were no military assets available. There were no covert action assets available at the insistence of the CIA because they wanted this only as a proof of concept operation. Fast forward to 2001. The flights had been suspended because of the winter during which they couldn't fly. We then became aware that there was a long-term program in the Air Force to arm the predator. Johnny Jumper, the head of the Air Force, thought that it might be possible to crash, probably the wrong word, to accelerate this program and arm the predator right away. General Jumper directed that happen. It happened in a matter of months, not a matter of years, and it appeared to work in tests in the western United States. When on September 4th we held the principals meeting that's been discussed, the issue on the table was, would CIA fly the armed predator? And CIA took the view in the principals meeting that it was not their job to fly armed UAVs. And they did not want to fly the armed predator under their authority. I was informed by people who had were in the CIA that during the discussions inside CIA, people in the Directorate of Operations had raised objections, saying, for example, that if CIA flies the armed predator and it kills bin Laden, then CIA agents all around the world will be at risk of retaliation attack by Al-Qaeda. I didn't think that was a very persuasive reason, because I thought CIA agents were already at risk of attack by Al-Qaeda. In any event, as the September 4th principals meeting ended, CIA had not agreed to fly the mission. September 11th happened. CIA then agreed to fly the armed predator mission. It went into operation very quickly in Afghanistan. It found the military commander. Within a month. It found the military commander of Al-Qaeda, and because it was armed then, it could not only find things, it could kill them. And it launched a missile, a Hellfire missile, at the military commander of Al-Qaeda, and killed him and his associates. Hope that answers the question.
That answers the question. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Mr. Clark, thank you very much. Thank you not only for your testimony today, but thank you for your extraordinary time you spent already with the Commission and your willingness to help us with our report.